This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing. And for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from Tan Talk Radio Network studio here in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And I just want to say hello to all my relatives in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, all you youpers. Oh, you are having so much fun because it is freezing up there. It was below zero last night. Oh, you people, I don't know how you take it. I love you all, but I couldn't live up there again for anything because I was freezing here when we had 43 degrees a few days ago. Well, and that was only in the middle of the night. And it was like, even that was too much for me. So just a big, big Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year to everybody, every youper, because you are actually living in one of the most gorgeous places in the United States. And I know you're going to have white Christmas and snow and freezing, and you love it. And that's the way it should be. So, well, whoa, this is wonderful today. I've got a very special guest coming on later on, and she's going to be reading a poem for us. And I was really thrilled that I found her because she's British, and as you know, I love all things British. And Anne Scott is going to be joining us a little later, and we're going to have a wonderful poem written by Anne Bronte. But right now, I get to welcome to the program Harlan Rector. He's a voiceover artist, and he's a regular artist. And I'm so happy to welcome him. He probably has a better voice than I do. Hi, Harlan.
Good morning, Patsy. Good to hear from you.
Okay. Well, it's good to hear you because, you know, when I first got an email from you, the first thing that stood out for me was that you'd lived in Detroit. And right. So although I'm from the Upper Peninsula, when I was in third grade, we moved to Detroit. And so I love the city. People always are surprised when I say, I love Detroit. I loved it. And so let's talk about everything. I don't know where to start with you. You've done so many wonderful things, and you are so talented. You're an artist. Your book with caricatures of famous people is fantastic, and I appreciate that you sent it to me. And, wow.
Well, I don't know. I've had two careers, and one was art director in an advertising agency. That's why I was in Detroit. I was discovered in L.A. to have a voice for commercials. So I left advertising and had a really great career in New York doing commercials and movie trailers and announcing for all kinds of stuff. And that was great. Just to talk and get paid. I never could have imagined that in my life.
It is nice. That's what happens to me. Well, I don't get paid, but I get to talk. Yes. And I love to talk, so that keeps me pretty busy.
And there you go.
And then you landed up in Detroit. How did that happen?
I was in this big ad agency, and the largest one in Detroit, and across the street from the agency was a big, big, big WJR radio station. Every day at 7, they had a show called Focus, and it was an interview show for an hour of celebrities, interviews of celebrities who happened to come through Detroit. And I was privileged to have the honor of sitting there every day at lunch, my lunch hour, and draw caricatures of three celebrities every day. And they signed them all, and I have the original caricatures of Clint Eastwood, Jesse Owens, Maria von Trapp, you can believe that.
Oh, they are beautiful. Your caricatures are, well, I think everyone would like to have a caricature done by you, because everyone in my family has had one done, except me, because I've always been afraid of you caricature artists, what you'll make of me. And so I'm not going to do it because I don't want to get mad at the poor person who draws me and makes me look ridiculous.
Well, I can understand that. Well, I don't draw big noses and ears and distort everything. I just do characters. They're really not characters.
Well, no, you capture their looks. The way that we see them, the way that people see them. I don't like when they overdo it. Your caricatures are just beautiful.
Well, thank you. But it's tricky because I did them all with a black magic marker, and you can't erase a magic marker. So it had to be right the first time. It was kind of scary to sit there and do that, but it was almost an out-of-body experience. I don't remember anything at all what they said. I just had in mind, I better do this good because this person is going to see it and have to sign it.
Well, the wonderful thing is, the of course, WJR is in the Fisher Building in Detroit.
Correct.
Wow. That is such a building. I tell people how many beautiful buildings there are in Detroit. And, of course, there were many more. Now there, so many are gone.
Right.
But
it was right up the street or catty corner to the GM building. That's where the agency was. That's an enormous building, not necessarily beautiful like that Art Deco Fisher Building, but it was enormous. But anyway, that's where I was most of the time.
Oh, and of course Hudson's department store was there.
Yep.
Was it still there? You were there when it was there.
Oh yes. Yeah. I only lived and worked there 6 years, but that show, the Focus program, went. After I left and moved to California in 75, that stayed on for 23 more years. J.P. McCarthy was just an incredible interviewer. So that was a fun part of my life.
Well, Detroit had so much going for it. Of course, as I said, Hudson's department store, the art gallery, the art museum, one of the best, one of the best, the library. I lived in Highland Park, and that's where McGregor Public Library was, which later on they put plywood on the windows. They closed it down, and they left the books inside.
Wow.
They left the books inside. When I found out, I was so angry. All they did, instead of giving the books away to people, all they did was wrap plastic around them, and left the books inside to rot. And, of course, in being Detroit, there's snow. And after years of snow dripping down the ceilings, I thought they were the most evil people in the world to do that, to that beautiful building, because it was absolutely gorgeous.
Well, Patsy, maybe you should know, and maybe your audience should know, I did these things in 1971 and 72. So when I say Clint Eastwood, it's when he was a young guy.
He's a young guy. He's so cute.
it's a great time. And I wrote this book called Once Upon a Corner in Detroit, and it has 65 caricatures in it. So, I'm glad you enjoyed the book.
Well, it is. It's all the little stories about the people and that you got to talk to, if they were, you heard them talking and maybe sometimes talk to you and then signed. I thought that was just a brilliant idea that you got.
And well, thank you.
So now you have a very, very valuable collection there.
Well, I do. I still have the originals of them, but one original I've just donated. It was of Colonel Harlan Sanders. And a good friend of mine who was another author, very prolific author, Jenny Cote, she's written really wonderful kind of children's books. And her grandmother was Colonel Sanders' first employee in Kentucky.
Wow.
In Corbin, Kentucky, when he started his business. So she and her mother are taking that original caricature of mine of Colonel Sanders and donating it to their museum. So that's not on my wall anymore, but it's the only original that is.
Wow. Wow. It's wonderful. It's wonderful when people do things like this and that you've kept them all. I think it's fantastic. But that was a interesting part of your life and interesting time of your life. And
right.
But you went on to do a lot of other things, including tell us what you did. You know, you wrote a play, A Taste of Heaven. Tell us about that.
Well, that was just totally inspired by God. It was it was Christmas time, actually, and I was thinking about a strange thought about whatever happened to the guy who took the last room at the inn. Nobody knows who that was. So I wrote the lyrics to a song. I'd never done that before. And after I did, and I thought, I wonder if there's other people who knew Jesus during his 3-year ministry, who would like to sing. And so I wrote the lyrics to a song that Barabbas the thief would sing about how he felt about knowing Jesus. And then I wrote a song that Mary would sing, and then Judas would sing. And I had 14 of these lyrics done, not a note of music, and I had no idea why I was doing this. And finally, I talked to a friend in New York who was a producer. I used to do work with History Channel. And he just said, "What are you doing?" And I told him what I was doing. He said, "Well, you ought to talk to my friend in Nashville, who's a great composer." So I sent everything to my friend in New York. He looked at it. He sent it to his friend in Nashville. And the guy called me. He said, "I love these lyrics, and I'd like to write all your music." Now, these things happen, Patsy, not because it's coincidence. God had his hand on whatever I was doing, especially because I didn't know what I was doing. So I kept writing, and then I thought, I wonder if this could be a musical. So I wrote the book for the musical, and we kept writing songs. And when we had 20 songs and the book was finished, a theater down near Branson got a hold of it and ran it for 18 performances, sold-out performances. It was wonderful. And then a theater in St. Louis ran it. And then I had a stage reading because I thought it needed to be rewritten a little bit. So I threw out some songs, wrote new ones, and changed the title to the new show is called A Taste of Heaven. And that came about by the song that one of the singers sang. It's a long story, so I guess I won't play it anymore. But it's a fascinating look at heaven, and having a lot of fun along the way in this show, and had a great stage reading. So I'm looking to hopefully maybe produce it maybe as a feature film.
That's what I was thinking. You know, when I invited you to be on the show, I only knew about your book about caricatures and about you living in Detroit. And so that's why I right away jumped on inviting you on. And that I invited you to come on December 24th is
right.
Really a miracle. Because
it is.
I didn't know, I had no idea about your connections to
right.
God, but to spreading the word. And I
right.
didn't know that you had written this play called A Taste of Heaven, a musical. And it is, when I read it, I was like, my goodness, how did this happen? I booked it for my program. I had been trying to think of somebody I wanted to talk to before Christmas on the Christmas
wow.
Eve program, and I didn't have anybody. I mean, I've had so many dystopian books and thriller books mm-hmm. and all sorts of things depressing, and I wanted something uplifting. And to tell you the truth, I couldn't think of anybody that I really wanted on the program. And so when I read this about you, and then when I read about this musical, because it's so funny. I have to tell people, the story begins in heaven, where Gabriel sends Isaiah and a young angel named Morty.
Oh, you know that.
Morty down to present day. Now I have a couple of Mortys in my family. So when I read that, I said, oh boy, I have to tell my Mortys. So Morty, a young angel named Morty comes down to present day Earth to produce a musical review about Jesus's life. And a taste of heaven then becomes a review within a story, within a musical. And Morty casts actors to play the biblical characters and falls in love with the singer who plays the role of Mary. Then the real fun begins. And the story ends in heaven with a cliffhanger ending only God could deliver. Now, my goodness.
Well,
that is so good.
You're terrific. I couldn't have said that in that short period of time. Well, then the title, A Taste of Heaven, came from a song that Morty sings when he's down on Earth. He falls in love with Sandra, and he knows he's going to have to go back to Earth when the review is over. So he sings a song, and he's asking God, I love her so much, can I bring her back to heaven with me? Whoa.
This absolutely has to be a movie. And I think, you know, when having worked in little theater and little theater productions, you know, many, my boys were little mini actors when they were young. So we were in a lot of different stage things. Of course, we did Christmas Carol I did so many productions of Christmas Carol over the years. And I love that play, but you're always looking for something new for the kids to do. We did a Charlie Brown Christmas. We did Christmas Carol. They should do this. I mean, this is one you could have kids do this one because it's wonderful, but you could have adults. It should be on Broadway when they open Broadway again. Next Christmas, they should have this on Broadway because it's uplifting. It's wonderful. It's so funny. I love this.
The big problem is trying to convince every theater or every different location to do a new play, and people just don't like to touch.
I was in little theater groups and we did look for new things, but we never found anything good. But this one is wonderful. I love this. And you're right. So since we can't get to every little town that has a theater to put it on, you have to do a film. You have connections.
Well, you only have to do it once.
Yeah, that you have to do it once. Do one film because I want to see Morty. I'm telling you right now, I want to see Morty on the big screen. I think it would be fantastic. It just puts a smile on my face just to think about the story. It's clever. It's smart.
That's wonderful. It's already for a producer who can say, yes, I'll do this, and then I'll find a way to do it.
Well, you have to do it. You and your son, I know your son is also enthusiastic about it. You guys have to work on it because we need this. We need this as a film. You know, you can just watch the Christmas Carol on television so many times, and, you know, over and over we watch the same ones. We need something inspiring like this and funny and beautiful and you know, that will touch people's hearts and get them into the right spirit and the mood.
I've already started a wish list of who's going to be starring in this. We'll see.
I'll tell you what you have to do. You have to find one actor who loves the role. And then they can work around it. You know, I was in Hollywood. I was in the script writing business. Oh boy. When you get something like this, when you get a storyline like this is something that you can just run away with. I would love this. You have to pursue it. You have to find somebody. I want to see this on the big screen. And when you get a deal, you have to come back here and tell me about it, because I think that there is somebody out there just right for this story, and who will make a film of it, because it is wonderful. And you know, it's part of we have a few minutes, let's talk a little bit about your other project, which is called Light, which is Living in Light. God's Hands Today. And I've been listening to some of the recordings, and they are so moving and they are so beautiful. So tell us about Light.
God inspired me to write radio dramas back in the 1980s, that would tell, be true stories about how God works in people's lives. And so I would get a story, and then I was in New York at the time, and my agent just gracefully decided he would cast these people for me. And so I, over the course of all these 40 stories, they employed 158 different New York really good voice actors. And we produced them in New York, and they were on 10 Christian radio stations all across the country for a couple of years. And finally, I could not afford to do it anymore. It was all after the initial making of it and everything. I still had to pay the stations. I still had to pay residuals to the actors and everything else. So they sat in a box for everywhere we moved, and finally, a friend urged me to make CDs out of them and give them to prison ministries as a prison ministry, so that prisoners can listen to these true stories about drug addictions, alcoholism, divorce, suicide, whatever it was, and help them to get rehabilitated while they're in prison because of the great stories and the great morals behind them all, and true stories. So I did, and now these CDs are in every prison in Florida, every prison in Missouri, half the prisons in Texas. And when I talked to the head chaplain of Illinois, he said, we can't have CDs in our prisons because the prisoners break them in half and use them as weapons. So he said, but they all have smartphones. So my son turned all of these into a free podcast, and now all the prisoners in Illinois can just hear these 40 shows, and anybody can hear them just by having the URL to bring them right to all the 40 stories.
Well, they are beautifully told stories, and just pure radio drama. They are wonderful. The voices are great. The stories are great. Very compelling. I'm sure
that I grew up at the time of radio and radio dramas, and so it was easy to do.
Well, you've captured it, and I think these are wonderful. A wonderful service that you've done of putting these out free, and people. I'm telling all of you, if you have anybody in your family who needs inspiration, these little podcasts, these little dramas, are very, very moving. They're wonderful.
Can I give the link?
Oh yeah.
Okay, it's just H Rector. That's HRECTOR. Podbean. PODBEAN. .com.
And
you do that, and you get all 40 stories.
Well, I think you've done a great job with those. And, you know, Harlan, it's just so wonderful that on this Christmas Eve program that I have somebody who really has found inspiration and who wants to inspire others. So what is your message about God and about finding joy and finding hope and just being a good person?
Well, I'm co-authoring second book. The first one was called I Matter. And they are essays from people who have something positive that happened in their life that might have changed their life or something. And the book is loaded with just beautiful, wonderful God stories. And so we're doing a second one called I Matter 2. And there is no such thing as coincidence. Everything that's ever happened to me has been God-inspired. And I think a lot has happened after I prayed about something. And then you have to be careful what you pray for, because God will make you work like crazy, and that's wonderful.
Well, I call them golden threads, the golden threads that have connected me to so many people and have brought me sometimes programs that I were unexpected, as this one was, or an author who I really didn't know. And then I discovered that the author lived in a town where I lived, or right, their character is set, you know, is having dinner in a restaurant where I had my fifth anniversary. So all of these things, these golden threads that connect us as human beings, one to the other, and to be able to find them and to appreciate them. And really, you are a golden thread, because I had no idea about all of this. All I knew was that you were in Detroit and you drew pictures, and that was enough for me, because I'm a little bit of an artist, not as good as you. You are a great artist. People have to go to your website, because you are really multi-talented. But you know, when I saw that, and then when I read about the part of your life, the Christian part of your life, and your desire to help people, I thought, my goodness, it is like a little miracle that you are on today.
Well, it's not a coincidence.
No, it's not.
Thank you.
Well,
thank you.
Well, you know, this is a wonderful thing, and I'm so glad that you're writing more, because we need these inspirational stories. We need to help people. And I just want to, you know, thank you again. And really, I'm hoping that A Taste of Heaven, as soon as you get a movie deal, you'll come on the program and tell me about it, right?
Yeah, I certainly will.
Because I want to see Morty on the big screen. This is going to be one heck of a movie. And this is what we need.
Thank you, Patsy. This was a wonderful opportunity for me to talk about God and how he works in people's lives, and obviously in yours.
Well, it is a miracle. And Harlan's website is harlanrechter.com.
That's all.
That's all. You go there, and everything that you need to see about Harlan, his beautiful artwork, more about his books, and definitely about his podcast, and a little bit more about A Taste of Heaven, because
all gifts of God. Everybody has gifts, and I just pray that people realize what they are, because so many people never find that out.
That's true. That's true. And I just want to thank you again, Harlan Rechter, for being on Joy on Paper today. You have been a joy, and everybody, check out Harlan, and he's going to come back. I know you're going to get a movie deal, Harlan.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye now. Merry Christmas to you and to your family and to everybody, okay?
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. All right. Okay. Wow. That's nice. We're going to have a few commercials, and then we'll be right back.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
From the pen of local storyteller Glenn Erickson comes a tale of romance and suspense. A truck driver encounters a beautiful woman fleeing in the night. Why is she running? Who is she running from? When Richard stops to help her, he has no idea his life is about to change. His quiet life as a widower is turned upside down when he discovers that Marie, as she calls herself, is really an advanced android. One who not only has escaped those who created her, but who has become self-aware. She wants to be free. She wants to live. Can Richard protect her from the corporation that claims her as their property to do what they want with her? Will Marie be able to find justice before she's captured by a bounty hunter? Android love is a new type of love story. Does an android have the right to feel love? To form an unshakable bond with a human that defies logic? The story of Richard and Marie will touch your heart and get you thinking about the world of the future. Are we prepared? Android Love, written by author and storyteller Glenn Erickson, is available on Amazon KDP.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper. Oh, I've already welcomed you. What am I doing? I'm just back from commercial. Who knows what I'm doing anymore? We're all confused. I am just waiting for a call. Did I get it? Okay, well, I just want to say, you know, at Christmas time, I always look for, everybody knows that I love poetry, and I always look for some nice poems to read or something different that maybe people don't know about. And so I've been doing a lot of work recently on Charlotte Bronte. As all of you know, I'm really a Jane Austen fan. That's what brought me to England. But I've been doing a lot of research about Charlotte Bronte, which is funny. She was 1 year old when Jane Austen died. And she actually, you know, everybody thinks of Charlotte Bronte and Jane Austen sort of together. And it's very funny as you do research and discover that Charlotte Bronte didn't really like Jane Austen's writing. Can you believe it? You know, it's funny. If they would have had Facebook in those days, I should actually do a very funny Facebook thing because she really didn't like Jane Austen. And there's a lot of reasons for that. So then I thought, well, you know, I have to do a play about Jane Austen and, well, about Charlotte Bronte and her dislike for Jane Austen, because I love Jane Austen. And while I'm doing the research, I come across a poem by Anne Bronte and, of course, Charlotte's sister. And so I thought, well, this is a lovely poem, and it's a Christmas poem. But I need, of course, somebody British to read it. I mean, I can't just have just anybody. I can't read it. I can't do that accent anymore. It's funny. When I lived in England, I picked up what I'm sure the English would not call a British accent. But when I moved to Texas, everybody said, oh, you're from England. So I must have sounded very, very strange. But I did live in England, and so I do know a proper accent. And so I was looking around, and then I remembered that I met this lovely, lovely woman, British, and she's got a real accent, and her name is Anne Scott. So I am so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper, Anne Scott. Hi, Anne.
Hi there. How are you?
Okay. Well, you have not lost your British accent, or at least you can remember enough to use it once in a while, huh?
I hope so.
Oh, good you didn't lose it, because really, really, it would be terrible if you started reading it with a Texas accent. I know that.
Absolutely.
And actually, you did live for a short time when you were a child in Yorkshire.
So I did, in the Dales, yes.
In the Dales. And so you have a proper accent because you were actually born in Kent. Which
yes,
is,
I was.
Which is, the accent there is not at all like a Yorkshire accent.
No, very different.
Very different. I spent a lot of time in Kent. Actually, I was following John Ball's and Wyatt Tyler's footsteps, because they led the which we're thinking about all of this taxes nowadays. They led the peasants' revolt against King Richard II, and that was all the way back in 1381.
Wow!
And when you think about it, the reason that they started a major revolution, what they hoped to be a major revolution, was that the king had started the king before him had started something called a poll tax, which is actually an income tax. And so people had the exact same feeling about income tax and the IRS.
Yeah.
and so Watt Taylor and John Ball, they got everybody together there in Kent, and that's where the whole uprising started, and they marched from Kent to London.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking, by the time they got to London, they had like 30,000 people.
Wow.
And they surrounded the Tower of London. And King Richard II was there on the tower watching as they burnt half of London down.
Oh, my goodness.
So people think, you know, we go through all of this riots here in 2020. Well, in 1381, they were rioting, and they were rioting then about taxes and about an income tax, because the king wanted so much money from everybody depending on their station in life. Well, you know, nobody wanted, and the peasants even, we don't have any money, but they wanted it anyway. And it was very funny that King Richard was 14 years old at the time. And he watched the riots, and at one point there was a whole little conflagration, and everybody got all confused. And this kid, he's 14, you remember, he's 14.
Young,
he
yes.
wants to save London, because London is going to go, they're going to burn it down. Eventually they'd be able to knock even down the tower. And he gets on his horse, and he rides out. And he's driving people crazy. This is why I was doing the research, because this is such a fascinating part of history. Nobody knows this about Kent, that right there, the people in Kent started this whole thing. He takes his horse and he goes to the peasant. He goes across the sort of the area where they're having fires and all, and he goes straight into the crowd of people who are protesting, and he yells, "Come with me!" He yells, "Come with me! We are going to save London." The people were so confused; they didn't know what's going on, and they followed him, and he saved London. Can you believe that? This is British history. I love British history.
Would have been a great loss if he hadn't done that.
Yeah, they would have burned everything down. They had already done a lot of the palace. It's fun. That's why I love British history, and I love always listening to somebody with a real British accent. You know, Lee Child was here 2 weeks ago, well, 3 weeks ago, I don't know, whatever. The days go, you know, the days are messed up. And it was his birthday. And but he doesn't have a British accent anymore. Of course, he comes from Birmingham, and he would have a Brummy accent. So I think he worked
very distinct.
I think he worked very hard to get rid of that Brummy accent. You know, because if he came to America with that Brummy accent, people would have laughed at him. So now he doesn't. Now that he doesn't sound like anything, his brother still has a little bit of a more British accent. But you have an accent, so we can talk a little bit about you. Tell us a little bit about you, because other than that, you come from Kent and you lived in Yorkshire. You have had an interesting life.
Yes. Well, I originally lived in New York when I came from England, and I worked for the William Morris Agency, which was a theatrical agency, and so I kind of became much in love with the theater. And from New York, I moved to Nyack, which is a beautiful little village on the Hudson River, north of New Jersey, actually. And it was very Victorian houses and arts and crafts and just gorgeous. And there was a local community playhouse there. So I got involved with that. And I did some producing, directing, and acting. And I finally got involved with a really cute little company called the Nasty Attic Players. And they used to, they named that because they used to rehearse in a nasty attic. And so that's how I first got involved and did quite a few different things with them.
And now you're involved with Barbara Harrington, who has been a guest on the program.
And Johnny Pandani, some laughter lines, and a few minor roles in movies, but it's been fun.
It's been fun. And now you're going to read a poem.
I am.
And I'll let you introduce it, and you read it, and we'll have some Christmas music here.
Okay. It's called Music on Christmas Morning by Anne Bronte. Music I love, but never strain could kindle raptures so divine, so grief assuage, so conquer pain, and rouse this pensive heart of mine, as that we hear on Christmas morn upon the wintry breezes borne. Though darkness still her empire keep, and hours must pass ere morning break, from troubled dreams or slumbers deep, that music kindly bids us wake. It calls us with an angel's voice to wake and worship and rejoice, to greet with joy the glorious morn which angels welcomed long ago when our redeeming Lord was born to bring the light of heaven below, the powers of darkness to dispel and rescue earth from death and hell. While listening to that sacred strain, my raptured spirit soars on high. I seem to hear those songs again resounding through the open sky that kindled such divine delight in those who watched their flocks by night. With them I celebrate his birth. Glory to God in highest heaven, goodwill to men and peace on earth. To us a Savior King is given. Our God has come to claim his own, and Satan's power is overthrown. A sinless God for sinful men descends to suffer and to bleed. Hell must renounce its empire then. The price is paid, the world is freed, and Satan's self must now confess that Christ has earned a right to bless. Now holy peace may smile from heaven, and heavenly truth from earth shall spring. The captive's galling bonds are riven, for our Redeemer is our King, and he that gave his blood for men will lead us home to God again.
Oh, wow. Mm. You just need a minute to think about it.
Yes.
It's so beautiful.
Thank you.
And you did a beautiful job, really wonderful. And,
thanks.
You know, the evils of this earth, wow.
Yeah, that's quite amazing, isn't it?
When you think about it, in 2020, and she wrote this poem so many years ago, and we still have evils on this earth, and it's just, I think, I love poetry because you have a moment there. You can read a poem a day easily, and with, you know, it's just sometimes to pick up a book of poetry. And to read it or to sign up for one of these groups, a poem a day or whatever, and just have this poem sort of at your fingertips and know that you can take words, simple words, and turn them into magic.
Yes, and you can always find something different, I think, or new each time you read a poem. You find, you know, you get a new...
Yes, it touches you. Yeah, exactly. It touches you in a different way.
Yeah.
I think if I had read the poem, well, you know, I read it maybe years ago, and if I read it even last year in 2019, I wouldn't have been so touched by evils of this earth. You know, now, like, yeah, dog, give me a break. I can't take any more evils of this earth.
Yes.
You know, so it's just...
That's hoping this too shall pass.
Well, we are coming to 2021.
And soon.
And we do hope so. And, you know, of course, for you and for me, we have many fond memories of England at Christmas. For me, Herod's like was...
Father Christmas.
Oh, and so many wonderful, wonderful memories of those years that we spent in England. And I want to thank you so much for joining me today on Joy on Paper. And
it was my pleasure. Thank you.
I have a feeling I am going to have you back.
Oh, wonderful.
Well,
I look forward to it.
Or at least I may have somebody. Yeah, I think so. It's going to be fun because we're going to have a little story here once we can start meeting together and having people around. We're going to talk more about Charlotte Bronte and her attitude about Jane Austen, my beloved Jane Austen. I can tell you, I was rather miffed when I discovered what she said about Jane Austen's writing.
Oh, dear.
Oh, yes. You know, it's going to be fun. So we'll be getting together again soon. And meanwhile, I want to wish you a very, very Merry Christmas.
And the same to you, Patsy.
Okay. And a Happy New Year to you. And thank you so much for joining me today on Joy on Paper.
My pleasure. Bye-bye.
Okay. And Scott, you did a great job.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. Oh, she's wonderful. Don't you love that accent? Oh, ho-ho. Now I need a cup of tea. I need to go home and have a peek friends and a cup of tea. Oh, and you know, I have my tea. I keep my tea. I use real tea, people. not those tea baggy things. I have real tea in Fortnum and Mason's canister. I've had it forever. From the very first, I think it was the very first thing I bought when I went to England. The very first place I went to eat was Fortnum and Mason's, and I bought a canister then, and I've had it with me, and it's traveled all over the world with me because I developed this love for proper tea made with boiling water. Please don't make tea without boiling water. It is really wonderful if you have a real cup of tea. Peter Riva was on the program, I don't know, I can't tell anymore, months ago, years ago, who knows what ago, and he talked about how he found a diner where the waitress will actually boil water to make his tea, you know, because for anyone who's lived in England, a cup of tea needs to be done with boiling water, and it brings back fond memories. Oh boy, this is exciting. I'm telling you, when I talk about the golden threads that have connected me to so many people who have been part of Joy on Paper. Of course, I have to talk right away. I mean, one of the main ones is I don't know what to call him anymore. Andrew Grant, Andrew Child, he's got another name. I don't know. He and his wife, Tasha Alexander, co-hosted the program during the pandemic-y beginning of this pandemic when I couldn't do it because I was broadcasting from home and it was driving me crazy. And I don't know, there were lawnmowers going outside and builders. And anyway, he and his wife are golden threads because they have just one thing after another. I have been to places where Tasha Alexander has set most of her books in places where I went on my honeymoons. And I had three honeymoons because I got married three times. Of course, luckily, I got married three times to the same guy. And he kept taking me on these honeymoons, which one of the honeymoons was a trip from northern Germany, Bremen, all the way to the south of Iran. And that was a long, long honeymoon. And we went all over the place. So, but Tasha writes these wonderful books. And I want to tell you, go and get her Christmas novellas, Tasha Alexander. She's written four of these wonderful novellas, all set in England at Christmas time. They're little mysteries, but they all have a wonderful message. So I needed something to sort of put me in the mood. And so last week, I pulled out all of them, and I started reading them one after another. And I just felt better. I felt better because they take me back to England. And secondly, it's just so, her writing is so compelling in the sense that you feel like you are back in England. And that's what I need. And you will enjoy these stories. And each one is, her main character, Lady Emily, is one of the most wonderful sleuths in all of cozy fiction. And certainly, it's all set in the Victorian times, which is a time that really is fun period to write about. And Tasha does this wonderful, wonderful deep research. So for me, because as I mentioned earlier about the Peasants' Revolt in Kent, Tasha knows about all of these things. She's also a historian. So these stories that Tasha writes are great, and I want to recommend both of them, well, all four of them, and also I want to recommend, Andrew Child, Andrew Grant's latest book, The Sentinel, which is the 25th Jack Reacher book, which he wrote with his brother, Lee Child. I can recommend that too, it's selling like crazy, so I don't know. Buy it. It's also a good read over this Christmas period through, I don't know, probably nobody's doing too much work over this whole time. Half the people I know don't even go to work anymore on regular days, let alone Christmas weeks. And Boxer Day is coming up for all of you British people. Oh, I know you just love Boxer Day. And all I care about is that they've been having a lot of soccer games. And, well, all I watch is Harry Kane. I don't really care about any of the other teams. As long as Harry Kane is on, I'm a happy person. So, well, I just want to wish you all a merry, merry Christmas. It's a wonderful time of the year. And a wonderful time to take some real time to think about other people and to think about what you want in life and to think about becoming a writer. If you haven't started writing during this pandemic period, when are you going to start? I mean, this has been perfect because most of you have been stuck at home or everything's sort of messed up. And so you're not working that hard, even if you are in the office. So remember what I always tell everyone. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. Or if you're very, very lucky to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or a series on the Hallmark Channel, like I want for Carol J. Perry's Witch City Mysteries. You never know, and you won't know unless you start writing. So start writing today, and make sure that you say something nice to somebody today. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Big Ed, for everything you do. Merry Christmas to everybody. And he saluted me, and I saluted him, because I should have been a general, and I'd be on a general's pension. I think they get a good pension. I wish they'd, yeah, no, what did I do? Why didn't I become a general? Anyway, everybody, Merry Christmas. Bye-bye now.